And they paid me in cash? What the fuck? Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, what am I, a fucking drug dealer? And welcome, everybody, to episode 11 of Digesting Cinema with Aaron and Christina. I'm your host, Aaron, and as always, I'm here with my host, Christina, and we are here to break down a 3 hour or longer movie this week. And we selected a nice, easy, light movie in Malcolm X, directed by Spike Lee, starring Denzel Washington. How are you today, Christina?
I'm doing really well. I just finished this movie, so I'm very excited to talk about it today.
Yeah, I watched it a few days ago. I am also very excited to talk about it. Right off the bat, I just want to reveal Christina and I are white. And it does stick out with discussing a figure like Malcolm X to not have a certain perspective involved in the discussion. We were recording a little bit early this week, and we also just kind of decided as a podcast, we're going to talk about this as a movie. So we are going to acknowledge historical aspects of this movie, who Malcolm X obviously was. But at the same point, this is about a 30-minute to 45-minute discussion when we separate out the ratings and everything. So we're not going to be able to get into depth with kind of the societal issues of overall what this movie's truly tackling. We'll definitely brush on it, but we want to just acknowledge that up at top. Is there anything kind of you want to mention on that, Christina, before?
One of the reasons I wanted to watch this movie is not only liking Denzel as an actor, but I feel like as part of the American education system, Malcolm X is also kind of glossed over. So I just figured it was, you know, it's time that I saw this movie. It was time that I took the opportunity to learn as much as I could about him from the movie to then delve into my own research. But yeah, we're basically sticking to the movie because I don't feel like it's necessarily our place to delve in much further than that.
Yeah.
You guys enjoy the discussion.
Yeah, exactly. And we both did definitely do separate research on this. I researched this movie afterwards much more than I did even the Blair Witch Project. So if you go back to that episode, you know how much research I did on that episode. But seriously, I think that Malcolm X is more than glossed over. I think he's pretty much been ignored or vilified in my educational upbringing and most people who I talk to. And it's just kind of coming around now. So especially, you know, when this movie was made in 1992, it was really serving a larger purpose, I think, for Spike Lee to really drive to have it in 1992 be a story that wasn't told. But yeah, we're just going to kind of jump into it a little bit here. 1992, when this was released, Spike Lee directed, as I said, starring Denzel Washington. Right off the bat, Denzel Washington in this role, I think, is absolutely incredible casting, incredible performance. And the fact that he does it over like a period of about 25 years of Malcolm X's life, and it works the entire time from when he's a young man and the, you know, issues there that he's delving into, you know, the jail and then later on in his assassination in the 60s. Denzel Washington is the star absolutely of this movie. Some really good supporting roles as well in this movie. But yeah, Denzel Washington, I think this is his greatest role by far. I don't think it's even close. I think this blows out any other Denzel role for me.
Yeah, I mean, Denzel really, even his movies that aren't even very good, he is always very good. He really can't do anything wrong. And I so enjoy watching him. And he really just embodies the characters that he plays and really just brings them to life. And you really connect with them on so many levels. And so for him to play a real person, I think he just did a spectacular job. And I really felt, from, again, the research that I've done, that he really embodied, even, you know, just like mannerisms he had and just, you know, really, even when he was giving speeches, like he would repeat himself sometimes, just it felt more realistic than just like I'm reading a script kind of thing. It kind of felt very similar to what it would be if someone's actually giving a speech. So I think he did a great job performance wise in this movie.
Yeah, I felt this entire movie really did feel in a lot of ways like a documentary.
Right.
And we say that, or not we as in you and I, but just people in terms of viewing films a lot say this sometimes, and it gets kind of overused, but it really does apply here. I think there's a lot of times in the movie where Spike Lee's editing style, which is very signature, but I think still a little bit more refined here than when you compare it to like a Black Klansman or even a Do the Right Thing. I'm a huge Spike Lee fan, so it was really interesting to see him more rein himself in a little bit to really tell a more conventional like biopic essentially. But it felt like there were times where it would go to black and white. It felt like real footage of Malcolm X. I'm not sure if it was or not, but that's how good Denzel's performance was. I'm pretty sure there was real
footage. Sometimes there was, and sometimes it was the movie, but it made you feel like you were getting the flashes of authentic footage.
Yeah, there's a reason with this movie that when it's brought up, Denzel Washington's brought up right away when we're talking about it. I mean, the way that he simply changes how he's speaking to a crowd when he goes to Harvard compared to when he's speaking to a group in the Bronx, and he just changes his coding a little bit. We've seen it. It's so subtle, yet it is so intentional, the way his performance in throughout this movie and how it changes from when he's, I guess we can kind of jump in. This is essentially a coming of age story in a way. You know, it's an epic for sure. Like, and these just kind of movies aren't really made anymore. So I think that as much, at least anymore, I'd compare it to, like a Social Network of our, the last 10 years or something. But it starts with him as a young man. And I think it starts in the barbershop, right?
Yep.
The barbershops. Yeah, where he's getting essentially like a chemical that makes his hair like a white person's hair. Really. I mean, essentially it strains it out, bleaches it, burns so badly like you can't, believe it. And it's all just showing this kid, basically. He's chasing around women. He's particularly interested in white women, which there's nothing wrong with that, but it's definitely focused on the time period in the 1930s as beyond taboo. And yeah, he is just kind of like a wise guy,
He had the best swagger. They had like the zoot suits going on. They were just like, and they had like the best hats. And you just saw this like vibrant personality that he just, wanted to live his life. There's things going on within the real world, but he, just had this like air about him. And I mean, he was a player. I mean, he was talking to any girl that would give him the time of day. Yep. And he was just, until he decided to start running his scams, he was just like living his life.
Yeah, and his, best friend was Shorty, played by Spike Lee, and he's revisited later on as well. But yeah, it's just, the first hour of the movie is, not what I was expecting. When I was going into it, I was expecting to be very much historical, drama, and it is essentially, but this is how Malcolm X started. Malcolm X, it's just a little different. So I did feel that when we talk about the length of this movie, this is a spot that I think we kind of got the point of, and it was a little bit overindulgent on Spike Lee's end to kind of extend this section of his life, especially when you see some of the areas that are a little bit shortchanged later in the movie that I thought were more important. It's like, I kind of got what Spike Lee was trying to say very early on about how Malcolm was like a flawed character who, really started out disillusioned, gets into trouble, and how he gets into jail, where I think the movie really...
Oh, yeah, that's... Once he gets sentenced to jail, I was like, all right, this is about to start picking up. You see him, and then he's narrating, so you get to know a little bit about his upbringing. You get to know about his parents, and those are all told through flashbacks with his narration. So you really start to get a sense of where he came from, who he is, kind of why he is the way that he is. His father was murdered, even though it was ruled a suicide, but obviously that's not what happened. Mom loses custody. Mom is biracial. She was a rape victim, or her mother was a rape victim from a white man. So Malcolm X's mother is biracial. That was brought up a few times. And then she actually loses custody, and then he's in the foster care system. So he's essentially raised by white people, attends white schools. So that totally just affects where he comes from, because he's seen such horrific things in his childhood. The KKK has come to his home, his father gets murdered, and then he gets thrusted into living in a white world and being the only black child there.
Yeah, not only that, but a notoriously broken system in the foster system, a broken system in the education system, which we talked about early on, Malcolm X hardly being a part of it. This movie was, when it was released, kind of thrusted him much more back into the public discourse, which is another reason I think Spike Lee wanted to do this. I know that still when I was younger, being taught about this in school in the mid-90s, basically what I knew about Malcolm X at my, school that had some diversity also you know, in quotes, was he was the violent one. He was the racial separatist one. All these
extremist compared to Martin Luther King's peaceful ways.
Exactly. You know, and it's just, it's even, I think it's presented in this movie throughout for a lot of it where that was, you know, how at least he was portrayed, certainly in some sound bites taken from certain impassioned speeches at different times. But I think we're kind of shown, especially as Malcolm X, you know, Malcolm progresses through his life, you know, that he kind of has a few like kind of revolutions with regards to his perspective.
Yeah.
And we're approaching the first one with Brother Baines when he gets put into jail.
I will say, when Spike Lee fainted because he didn't understand the word concurrently, I did chuckle. That was funny.
Yeah, Spike Lee has some really good, there's some really good comedy actually in this movie, and I appreciated the moments of levity when they were put in there. But yeah, the jail, I think, was the scenes in jail were really, as you said, where this movie starts to pick up for sure. I really, really enjoyed the conversation with Brother Baines, who I did find out was fictionalized, completely made up guy. And it is weird a little bit just because he's part of so many of the key scenes. And there's a few times where like he like becomes like Elijah's like right hand man. And like, I'm just like, why is he like here and in this position that I thought was like, it felt like it didn't belong. And that kind of makes sense, but it served the purpose I got for what Spike Lee was trying to express.
Yeah, because in the movie, you need, I guess, more of a showing reason as to why Malcolm X turned to Islam. And instead of, I guess it's not as interesting to watch in a movie of just having him stumble upon it himself.
Studying like his like self and read a book.
I guess you can almost even interpret it as like, here's his like inner workings of like having a conversation almost with himself about it. I really enjoyed his character. I thought like he brought a lot of like truth to the situation of like, you know, guys, here's how you've been raised your whole life. But like,
are you talking about Baines?
Yeah. Where he sits down, where they're in the jail.
The dictionary scene
was crazy.
Yeah, because that's all true.
Right.
And it's just like, and it was written by a old, you know, some white dude. And it's like all of the description of white and black are just like, it is just like it positions you. And later in the movie, even, you know, when Malcolm's reciting one of his speeches, and he's like, before there were Jews and Christians, we were black.
Right.
Like, it's like from, it is, you know, something that I've had come up in, you know, I've heard in different political discussions where gay rights has been brought up and they've tried to compare right with racial rights. And it's just like, when I've had that conversation and heard it with members of each of those kind of groups, you know, black people get really mad and be like, I don't have a choice of revealing at all that I'm black. You see me, I am black. And it's just like that. I mean, it just kind of, again, you know, I mean, like just really, really kind of, I just really noticed that and found that really interesting. And I thought that while Baines was, you know, a made up character, he, I think, was one of my favorite performances of the movie. I really do think the supporting performances, Angela Bassett as Betty, and then Al Freeman Jr. as Elijah Muhammad. Oh, Al Freeman Jr. and Denzel Washington, those two, you couldn't tell when it was the real person and when it was the person who was acting. And so one of my kind of research things came to Al Freeman, and Roger Ebert said he thought Al Freeman didn't get nominated for an Oscar because people thought it was Elijah Muhammad in the movie and they did not understand it wasn't. And like, so yeah, Roger Ebert was one of the biggest fans of this movie, actually, and he happened to be in an interracial marriage as well. And so he picked up on a lot of these themes where when this movie was first released, a lot of the political discussion was, this movie's just a movie trying to make white people feel guilty for how they treated black people. And like, it's just trying to separate the races. It's trying to divide us. Originally, a white guy was supposed to direct this movie. And then a lot of Malcolm X's camp was like, probably should be in it a black person who directs this movie. With all due respect to Norman Jewison, who's done some really great work in the 60s, 70s, and has been a huge activist, like, you know, kind of requires that perspective a little bit.
Right.
So with regards to the jail, the dictionary scene, that was really
And then the scene in the yard where Baines is just like kind of just breaking down, just like their history all the way back to their roots of just like, you know, your last name isn't really Little. Like there, we had a story before we came here, and it's in a way that's empowering. That it's not a shame thing. Like, you know, there's no reason to be ashamed that you're here. That, you know, obviously people that aren't alive anymore are the reason that we're in the situation that we're in. But that you still have a past. You guys still have roots. You still have other ancestors. And it's okay to, you know, want to discover that and celebrate that and be proud of that, which I just thought was just such a really nice perspective, because I think about all the times, like, I don't describe myself as like a European American. You know, I say like, you know, my family, my ancestors came from Italy. I can tell you the town that they came from. So like, I could go there someday and literally walk on the same streets that, you know, my great grandfather lived in, because I know these things, because I've been told these things. But there are people in this country that can't do that, that can't trace it back because their ancestors were forced to come here and there's no record of where they were brought from. And it's just, you know, that was just an eye-opening experience of just, you know, it's okay to wonder where you came from and be proud of that and, you know, celebrate, you know, your African roots.
Yeah. And it just makes you realize how much our perspective is shaped through the identities that have been forged here, and then why it matters where you come from, or why it matters that you can at least track where you come from and other people cannot. And it's just, you know, it's like your name is Little, but it's like they gave you that name. And it's like, you know, it's even the dictionary that it's like everything is just through the lens of white people because of their inability to adapt to others and their just obsession almost with having others adapt to them. And it's just like, it's like not all white people, not all black people. This is not a black or white thing, but it also is where the general applies, you know, that's kind of the principle. So yeah, I think those are kind of the two major scenes from the jail that, you know, we kind of go over. We see that Malcolm really begins to kick his drug habit. Baines gives him the nutmeg milk one time, only one time. And then it's like, that was your last, you know, little trip there. And he kicks his drug habit, becomes a minister of Islam, essentially. And if that's
not fair. Thank God.
Yeah. Cuts his hair. Yeah.
Hair was not a good look. Like, I'm actually surprised the barbers he went to, like, were like going to keep letting him do this.
It was a different time. It was just a different time. And he becomes a active member of the Nation of Islam. And overall, Baines, just one more thing on Baines, is that Baines really reminded me, his relationship with Malcolm reminded me of the relationship that was in Good Will Hunting with Matt Damon and Robin Williams kind of character. There was just like, I feel like there was definitely some borrowing and like kind of the influencing of, like, you know, I think it's interesting to see how Malcolm X is not brought up as one of these like seminal biopics for whatever reason, at least to me, like some of these others. And I think it is because of the subject matter and the emotions it makes you feel, especially white people have to deal with when they watch this movie. And a lot of white people just kind of hate feeling guilty about their role or the role they didn't play in where we're at today. So it's brought up, you know, Malcolm deals with like the white lady who comes up to him after he's out of jail. And she's like, how can I, as a white woman, help with the African-American struggle in America? And he's like, you can't. Like, right. Like, get out of the way. Like, it's just like, oh man, that people just hate hearing that when they feel guilty and want to be a part of it. And it's like, you can't.
Right. Because I feel like a lot of people, I think, found him to be extreme. At least, again, this is my interpretation, totally based off of the movie. Right. Was just, I think, mostly a lot of religious people, when they get overzealous about religion, seems extreme. Like, that can be off-putting sometimes when people get, like, the preacher voice and they're yelling to you about that stuff. And it seems more extreme than it really is. Like, I think deep down, his message seemed to be more of, you know, embrace who you are, celebrate who you are. At one point, he was screaming, like, you're black and you're beautiful. Because that's just who you are. Like, that is factual. This is not up for interpretation. And, you know, I think people just saw it as such an extreme contrast as well, because especially later on when Martin Luther King was prominent, you know, he focused so much on peace. So it seemed like, you know, because Malcolm X was speaking out and suggested that black people had the audacity to defend themselves, that he was promoting violence.
Yeah.
Just like, no,
yeah. That's not. And it's, It's just an example of the media, you know, taking sections of what he'd say and twisting it into the narrative they wanted. Pitting Martin and Malcolm against each other and people against each other, I think, was all by design. You know, while also the media definitely was kind of corrupting the message that Malcolm was trying to present, and I think it was very intentionally shown in the movie that Malcolm was never a part of inciting any violence himself. He just would use very vivid language when discussing life or death matters, like if you're getting your skull bashed in, you need to defend your life by any means necessary. Like things that shouldn't have to be said, honestly, but were for a reason.
Well, was it one of the scenes like, are you encouraging them to have guns? And he's like, I'm encouraging them to defend themselves just like a white person would defend themselves. Yeah, like, he's like, I don't see an issue with this.
He's like, American citizens have the right to bear arms. I'm encouraging these American citizens to bear arms. And it's like really allowing for the audience, aka white people, to reveal their own kind of motives and biases and terrible instincts with their questioning, actually. And also, it's at this point, Malcolm was a lot more angry, was still working his ways through his own policies. And no, he did not want random violence. He didn't want churches bombed like with Birmingham and other occurrences. But I think he at one point did think that the answer was separating the races, you know, or at least was starting to go that way.
Well, yeah, because we definitely see an evolution of him because, you know, he starts out, you know, white people are the devil, all of them. And then it's, you know, in his perspective, I mean, what white person was good to him? And then, you know, by association, if you're not going to be helpful, then you're being hurtful. And you see, you know, you see that evolution come around that comes, you know, obviously the media uses that against him, you know, like, you know, you said all of this, but, you know, also part of it might have just been he's going to say extreme stuff just to rile people up, just to get conversations going. Doesn't necessarily have to be a deep belief, but it, you know, it needs to be out there and to get people talking and to get people thinking and to get his name out there.
That, and also it's like, who doesn't develop or mature their views on life from when they're younger? I mean, it's just like, that's kind of one of the biggest problems in politics to this day is you can't make changes or become different than what you were in the past. And therefore you have to just maintain and further, you know, dig your tent poles into your identity. And it's just like,
he was a young kid that just got out of jail and being in jail much longer because of the color of his skin. And so he obviously was very angry.
Yep.
So angry people say stuff. They say extreme stuff that in the moment they may mean, and in the moment, you know, they may realize later that they don't mean. But I think this movie did a great job of showing his, you see it in the movie, you see his shifts, you see his, like, he acknowledges, you know, I think I need to rethink how I'm saying this, I need to rethink how I'm doing this. And I thought it was just very interesting to see his general message always kind of stay the same, but evolve on how he wanted to express it.
Yeah. And, you know, part of that is with, you know, regards to his relationship with Elijah Muhammad, who, you know, again, one of the guys I think was one of the best roles. Al Freeman Jr. played him. Elijah Muhammad kind of was like a false prophet, false god for Malcolm and so many others. He was a womanizer. He was in it kind of for the money. It's like classic power corrupts all. And it caused Malcolm to withdraw from his initial Brothers of Islam. And Baines, who was his biggest, you know, support and biggest guide and everything, had said so much, was suddenly the things he had vilified earlier. And now he was kind of against Malcolm in a huge way.
And Malcolm, I think, had such blind faith in the beginning and was kind of, you know, some of the stuff he said wasn't even his own original thought. He acknowledged that later, that, you know, he was kind of regurgitating some things based on the bigger group. And I think that was just a moment for him to realize, okay, blind faith is not the way to go. Like, I need to find my own faith and, you know, interpret things how I want things to be done and not necessarily everything that he says.
Yeah. So now
there's definitely a lot of turning points in this movie that I really appreciated, that they really acknowledged them. Like, they showed him, like, monologuing to himself or even having the conversation of, this is a turning point.
Yeah. And I mean, so now he's not just an opponent of kind of white establishment. We see the CIA or whatever government agents are kind of listening in, but that was pretty acknowledged at this point that the CIA was spying on both Malcolm and Martin during these times. And there's also very, very much fingers pointing to them being part of the assassinations of both, which that, again, is 60 years ago. Like, my mom was alive during the time that this happened. It's like very, very recent. And it's just swept under the rug and kind of unacknowledged. And yet this movie will kind of batten it back up, and it's hard to ignore, and I think causes some people to just, it's too upsetting to pay attention to. I think maybe that's why it's not brought up like an Amadeus biopic or a Lawrence of Arabia or these other classic Hollywood epics. I don't know why Malcolm X isn't on that level. I just found that really, really interesting. But yeah, when he realizes Elijah's a false prophet, you know, they're still getting attacked by the KKK. You know, I mean, they're being attacked on all levels. Malcolm, at this point, really knows he's going to die. He knows he's going to die early. He knows he's going to be killed. Doesn't know who he's going to be killed by, you know. And that is definitely something that we all know going into the movie. I think it starts with a little, maybe it doesn't start with a text. I mean, I knew he died February 21st, 1962, I believe. 65. Okay. Flipped over the number, the last number. But yeah, either way, I mean, there's a feeling of inevitability that this movie, as it approaches the final act, more and more, you know where it's heading. And it's just, it's all the more tragic after he makes his pilgrimage to Mecca, sees that there's white Muslims, there's brown Muslims, there, as he puts it, there's yellow Muslims. I mean, he realizes it is not a race. We are, like, without sounding like a hunky-dory, we are the human race. And he realizes that in the most prophetic of ways. And they filmed this on location in Mecca. This is something that was not happening before. And for Spike Lee to, like, get that kind of access and get to do that. And it's just, by this point, the movie had gone from really vivid, bright colors of when he was a kid to kind of the muted dark colors of jail to kind of the half shade, half light of the Muslim world, of the Islam, of Brothers of Islam with Elijah Muhammad and all of that world, where kind of was seeing the truth, but not really. And now we're in this bright, beautiful, vivid, open landscape in Arabia, where it's just beautiful. It is bright. It is, and he is becoming enlightened. As he's becoming enlightened, it's lighting it up. And that's just like kind of one of the many very subtle directing things that Spike Lee, or maybe not subtle at all. Maybe I'm just an idiot, but I found it really cool.
Or maybe it's just really sunny there and we're just thinking way too much into weather.
I don't think so. I think I'm onto something. But yeah, what did you think of kind of the pilgrimage to Mecca? I haven't really seen that in a movie.
No, I've never seen that in a movie before. I thought it was beautifully shot. I loved how they would, you know, do like the aerial shot, and you just see how many people are there, and they're all there for this common reason and to worship. And, you know, it doesn't matter who you are. Like, we all have this common goal. We all have this common faith, and they're all there to just celebrate and worship. And if you're one of the, you know, if you're somebody that is part of this religion and wants to partake in this, I guess ceremony would be the best way to say it, you know, then you're welcome. And it was just really, it was a beautiful thing to see. And I really like how they filmed it, zooming out and seeing just the landscape, seeing the pyramids, seeing everything was pretty cool.
Seeing so many people around each other after the last year. It's like, oh man, careful.
It was like another step though in his evolution. You know, we've seen his views kind of, it was nice to see so far in the movie when we see a change in him, something tragic happens. You know, his house catches on fire as a child. His father dies. His mom loses custody. He goes to jail. He finds out essentially his mentor is a phony. And so he has all of these terrible things happen to him. And that kind of gives his evolution. It was really nice. And you could see it on his face, just the peace of something wonderful happening and him truly having an enlightenment that now adds to his revelations, that he is now becoming better because something good happened, or he's changing because something good happened to him.
Yeah. And even the media acknowledges it when he comes back, how he's like, you seem different. Like, it's like, what about the beard? Is that part of your new religion? Like, and he's just like, no, he's just like, nope, just like the beard. Like, basically, it's just like, yeah, it should look good. I mean, he could rock it all. It's Denzel, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah.
And Malcolm himself, a very good looking man as well.
Yeah.
To be honest, like, it's like, if you're getting played convincingly by Denzel, you're a good looking guy. So, congratulations on that end, too.
I love Denzel. I love him.
Yeah. Definitely, we're getting towards kind of the inevitable end of the movie. And I'll admit, I didn't know who assassinated Malcolm X before I saw this.
Me neither. I didn't realize.
It's how? The Nation of Islam. Right. Yeah, right. The Nation of Islam, his brothers from earlier in the movie. I don't remember exactly what the subject was for why he was doing the speech there, but basically they come up and they don't just assassinate him. They shoot him so many times.
Oh, yeah.
And they show it all. This movie was PG-13. This movie got a PG-13 rating, which I think props to the Motion Picture Academy of America, because by rating it this PG-13, it was able to be accessed by many more people than if it was rated R. So, and I do feel this movie should be shown in schools. I think this should be one of these kind of required types of viewings, like To Kill a Mockingbird or 12 Angry Men, these other movies that teach us about the judicial system and social, you know, justice. I think this is just as important. And that scene, the assassination, is terrifying. I mean, it's just pure chaos. You see people getting trampled. It looked real, like, and you see the rage of all of the people, and you want, at least me, as I'm watching it, I wanted these people to tear these guys apart just right in front of them. And when I see the police get them and save them from the beatings that all the people really wanted to get, I was like, oh man, like, this is exactly what they wanted. I'm sure that people within the police, CIA, were helping in organizing this, because at the end of the day, the Nation of Islam, headed by Elijah Muhammad, seemed to be interested in maintaining power and influence, and did not really see. And so I do think that most likely, you know, insinuated that definitely the government played a role in this based on the history of our country. It's shown the government has played a role in a lot of powerful minorities' voices being silenced. So it makes me hard to believe this one is not one of those cases. Hearing the cries from Betty.
Yeah. Angela Bassett. We just have not given her enough credit. I feel like she wasn't really in the movie that much, but she's so memorable in it.
Yeah. When she's in it, she's so great. It is one of these movies that she isn't the focus of. And there could have been a whole nother movie made called Betty, almost, where it could have focused on the role she was playing, because she was a part of this movement as well. And I think that's a really good point. Anything else kind of you want to talk about with regards to the assassination, or kind of the final little bit? We'll get to the final bit with Nelson Mandela in the classroom as well, because I can't imagine you love that.
Oh, you know, I love that. I just felt, I think typically when you, I guess just in your head, when you think of assassination or when you see other, you know, assassinations depicted on screen, it's basically, you know, a one shot guy runs away kind of thing, maybe gets two and then flees the scene kind of thing. And these guys, I mean, shotguns. It was almost like the other guys were mad that they missed their opportunity, because he was clearly dead. He was shot at least, I think, 3 times with a shotgun. And then these other two guys just stood up and just started shooting his body that was already on the ground several times. So it just seemed like maybe there was multiple people that wanted to get in on this. I mean, it was just like, and they seemed proud of it and that they weren't going to flee the scene immediately. Like, they only fled because other people were attacking them. It wasn't that they didn't want anybody to find out that they did it kind of thing.
No, to not get their asses beat, it seems.
Right,
like.
Right.
It seems like they're almost so comfortable doing it that they had permission, or and they probably ended up just being patsies, you know, and the important people who really, you know, set it up, like Elijah Muhammad and whoever the real life Baines was in this case, you know, get away scot-free and continue to just get to reign their influence. Yeah, it's just, I mean, you can see their faces in the crowd before it happens. You can just see how much they want to take this guy down. Like,
and to do it in such a public place in front of his family.
Children there. You know, they say no one else is injured, but we see people were trampled. So once again, the police are immediately coming in and be like, yeah, just one guy dead. It's like, there are multiple people dead there. The guy who got trampled is not alive. And multiple people got trampled. Multiple people were shot. We saw multiple people shot, and the police are right in front of people who are shot saying there's no one injured here. It's like, it's just, I mean, again, these white systems have kind of throughout, and it's like, we know the origins of police. They started as slave catchers. It's like everything in this country nearly is founded on extremely racial foundations, racially divided foundations at that. And so it's, this movie really, really had me thinking and feeling throughout. I just found it to, if it wasn't even a true story, be a tremendous coming of age character study on a member of an extremely important movement and the lasting impact of that movement, which is where I want to end our discussion on for the movie, which is the final little kind of speech which is taken from an actual Malcolm X speech spoken by and then spoken through the children. I am Malcolm X. I am Malcolm X. You're seeing all these beautiful different faces, different voices say it. And then Nelson Mandela drives it home. You know, this is kind of a signature of Spike Lee's, that finishing kind of editing montage that he's done a lot.
Yeah, I love how he ends movies.
And he knows how to end a movie. I love how he ended this one. And yeah, I'm ending it with tears in my eyes. But I'm really inspired at what I feel Spike Lee, I felt like, was trying to make the lasting impact of his message, which I think he was trying to change a little of the narrative here by with this movie. I think he did. And so I really appreciated that being the final crux of his direction with this movie.
I agree with you.
Okay. Is there anything else you kind of want to touch on before we get into our ratings, and then we are going to definitely switch gears for next week as we are.
Yeah, I think it's just, I'm a little bummed. I hadn't really seen this earlier, I think, but you know what? It's better late than never. It's always good to educate yourself on different aspects of our history and to see other people's perspective of their interpretation of this story. And I think, you know, Spike Lee does an excellent job when he tells these stories. And I love how he ends movies. I appreciate that you, sometimes you can get lost, even though you know it's a biopic, because this was an epic. And then it kind of just really brings it back home. You know, this was a real person. This was a real story. This affected real people. And I do like how he ends his movies like that.
It really brings home the message. I don't think, with a message that still so many people in this country aren't getting nearly 30 years after this movie was released, which is amazing all in and of itself. So now we get to our rating section of the podcast here. And again, as I said at the beginning, I just kind of want to make this clear again. I get this was a very surface, a little beneath the surface level discussion on an issue that deserves way more of a discussion. There are other podcasts for that. There's some really great discussions and great additional research that I've continued to do through this week, but I don't want to make it seem that I feel we provided a in-depth research on Malcolm X. This is a movie reaction podcast. So I just want to say that one more time, just because I think we still did touch on it, but, you know, not trying to say this supplements for, I'm encouraging everybody to go out and research Malcolm X more themselves. I think it's an important subject. And I think that, and again, just to reiterate, I think this movie should be shown in high schools all over the country much more than it is. I just think this is kind of one of these things that I wish I would have learned about earlier as well. So I'll lead us into our ratings. It's out 5 stars as it is with Letterboxd. Half stars are allowed. I am going to give this one a 4 out of 5. Just a little bit too long in some sections and too short in some other sections for me. I would have preferred, if it was going to be this length, for a little more of the focus to be with him and Betty, maybe even some just scenes with Betty alone also would have been interesting. And just, we did get a peek into Malcolm's head a lot, but I wish there was just some more quiet moments without other characters involved for Malcolm, where we could really get a little bit more insight into his psyche and also what actual plans and ideas were implemented from his actions. I wish there was a little more shown on that. And maybe there wasn't, because there still hasn't been as much concrete, unfortunately, shown on that. But those are just, but they're critiques. 4 out of 5 is still really good. But yeah, 4 out of 5 stars for me.
I actually agree with everything you said as far as the length of the movie. I'm going to also give it 4 stars. It was very long. I think the beginning was probably too long. I think there's some parts of the, like the middle and the end, that you're like, this is like so good. This is like, I'm enamored with what's happening here. And it's like, I didn't really need, you know, 45 minutes that was in the beginning. Like, I kind of figured out what his situation was. I would have liked to see him more as, you know, as the historical figure he had become. I understand why Spike Lee chose to do what he did, but I think like there was just so much more of that could have been told a little bit more in depth of what was happening. We didn't really get a lot of relationship with his children either, which I think would have been nice to see a family side to him. Obviously cared deeply for them. I think family was important to him. I think he had a lot of trauma with his family, so I would have liked to see maybe just some happy moments with that. But yeah, overall, this movie is excellent. Spike Lee is a genius. Denzel Washington is so talented. If we're taking this, even if this wasn't even based on a real story, this is so moving, the story that was told. So again, yeah, this is definitely opening up my eyes, making sure that I can educate myself further, because as you know, as we've talked about before, the school system is not giving us, I think, an appropriate version of what we needed to know.
No, definitely not. So yeah, that will give us our second straight week of a 4 out of 5-star movie. And again, we will be putting all these up for the first, I'll say dozen. So it gives us another week to make this graphic. The first dozen ratings will be up soon. But we have one more part of this podcast, and this is my favorite part of the podcast. It is the recommendation section from both of us, as well as our great, great fans, or our great fins this week, since we're doing sharks.
I'm so sorry that all of you are here right now. Okay, continue. <laughs> Okay.
So I'll get to our fins recommendations first. We have first a Shark Tale from Scott Harvey. I love puns now, but Scott Harvey every week suggests a movie that I am interested in. And this week, he suggests one that actually a couple people have suggested. He suggested The Shallows, starring Blake Lively. I think it's like Blake Lively on a bikini on a rock.
Surrounded. I think it is, which like I'm down for.
I could talk about that for 2 hours. He said it's the best B, one of the best B movies of the 2010s. So that's kind of an interesting endorsement. Billy P., happy birthday today, Billy. His birthday is on Saturday, March 13th, which is the day we're recording this because I'm going home tomorrow.
Happy birthday, Billy.
Yeah, happy birthday, Billy P. He has a few. Shark Tale, the animated classic. Life Aquatic of Steve Zazu, which is a Wes Anderson film, which I'm curious if you've seen a Wes Anderson movie. That would be an interesting
one. I don't know. I've seen a Wes Anderson movie.
And then Deep Blue Sea, your husband's favorite and many other people's favorites. Deep Blue Sea seems to be one a lot of people brought up. Stephen Shepard brought up Jaws, while Joseph, he brought up Jaws the Revenge. He said it provides a lot of laughs, and it's a so bad, and it's hilarious. Camp kind of way. So that's interesting. 47 Meters Down, Robert Kastner. Peggy Gubbins brought up the Samuel L. Jackson lager commercial from Dave Chappelle, if we want to do that. And then Sharknado was brought up. I don't think I could think of any other shark movies, to be honest.
Well, there is also Sharkboy and Lava Girl, I will throw out there.
Okay.
So that's everything on my list has already been said, so I will throw out Sharkboy and Lava Girl. I have seen it already, though, so it's technically cheating. But guys, it is cringy bad, and it's so wonderful. I used to watch it all the time because the little kids I babysat wanted to watch it, and Taylor Lautner is adorable because he's like 9.
Okay, so I'm going to give you 2 of our shark movies to suggest, and I'm going to suggest 2 this week. My 2 will be The Shallows, because Blake Lively. I remember that Entertainment Weekly ahead of time because I still was reading Entertainment Weekly back then. And yeah, she looked real good in that. So I'd love to find out the story. And then this is one I have seen before, but it's one that I love. Deep Blue Sea. Deep is bluest. My head is like a shark's fin. I would love to talk about it. I'd love to revisit it. There's so many moments in that movie, and sometimes you just got to have a week of a rewatch. I'm going to be home, so I'm feeling nostalgic. You know, I'm going to say Deep Blue Sea. So Deep Blue Sea and The Shallows are my 2 suggestions.
So I'm like, what do I want to talk about? Do I want to talk about how banging Blake Lively looks as I am dealing with my quarantine body right now? Or do I want to essentially watch Snakes on a Plane, but with sharks?
Mm-hmm.
Because you know I love me some Snakes on a Plane.
Yeah, this is Snakes on a Sub. Have you seen Deep Blue Sea?
I have not, but basically that's how Anthony has described this movie to me, is you love Snakes on a Plane. So
if this movie didn't swim, Snakes on a Plane couldn't fly.
I hate you, because that actually works really well. And it almost makes me want to vote no on this movie so I don't get any weird puns next week. I vote yes on this movie, only get 3 jokes next week.
Luckily, most of my jokes aren't funny, so I'll probably be able to get like 10 in. You won't even know it because you'll think like, oh, that was just an odd thing that Aaron just said.
A weird thing Aaron said. That's embarrassing.
So I guess that we are going from
Deep Blue Sea.
Yeah, we're going from Malcolm X, the Oscar nominated film, to a Razzie nominated film.
I feel like we've done so many Oscar related movies. It's time to watch some garbage.
And this is some good quality garbage. You know, I think the whole idea of each week one of us seeing a movie we've never seen before. Some weeks we just got to break it. I've seen this movie plenty of times. I'm ready to see it again for the first time in my 30s. So it's time to revisit this classic. Deep Blue Sea next week is going to be a lot of fun. And that's the last
I'm
time.
I'm busy you. Next week.
Don't worry, we'll work around the schedule. We're very flexible here on Digesting Cinema, going from Malcolm X to next week's shark film. Shark Week comes early here in feature presentation land, and we are watching Deep Blue Sea. Before we take off, Christina, where can people find you on the social medias and anything coming up this week for you or anything?
Nothing coming up this week, but guys, make sure you guys are watching the Schmodown. We got a lot of good rookie matches. Rue had his. If you guys didn't watch Brother Lomas and Frankie Alvarez, that was quite the match. But you guys can follow me on Twitter at @Christina_VEE and then VE19. I don't ever remember my Twitter handle. I don't know, understand how anybody follows me on Twitter. And then my Schmodown match will air on March 25th. And then hopefully I'll be on some after shows after to spill all of the tea about the match.
Yeah. And we look forward to that for sure. You can find me at Aaron J-A-Y Brooks on Twitter. Definitely, let us know your thoughts on so far what you think about the podcast. I've been interested to hear people's thoughts. Also, we do still have our form that if you do want to fill it out, just message me or Christina. We'll send it over to you. But we've definitely filled up at this point, so no guarantees on spots, and it's not personal if we don't take you. But anyways, for Aaron, for Christina, keep digesting cinema out there, everybody. And we'll be back next week with a shark-ridden episode of Digesting Cinema.
Bye, everyone.
Shark fun.
I hate everything. I don't like.
But that's all, folks.